From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Nokia Theater in downtown Los Angeles, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Oh, if you think you are excited now, just wait until Hugh Bonneville, better known as Lord Grantham from Downton Abbey, joins us later to play our games. Man, it is good to be back in L.A. We love being here because you guys are so cool. You're so used to celebrities walking around in your midst, so you never bother us. Or even indicate that you have any idea who we are. But we're eager to tell you how much we like your work. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Gable Brady, and I come from Bellingham, Washington.
Hey, Bellingham, Washington, a great place to be from. We understand that just this week, recreational marijuana became legal.
It did?
Oh, yeah. So we assume you're stoned out of your mind.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not.
Yeah, well, there you go. Can't decide. Sure sign. Well, welcome to our show, Gable. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber, sitting right there.
Hello.
Hey, Gabe. How are you?
Next, a comedian who'll be at the Fox Tucson Theater in Tucson, Arizona on New Year's Eve. It's Paula Poundstone right here.
Hello, Gable.
And if you're in Miami on New Year's Eve, go see actor and comedian Maz Jobrani at the Miami Improv. Maz is here with us. Great to see you.
Hey, Gabe. How are you, buddy?
So, Gable, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes, I am.
Here is your first quote.
Let the royal baby bump watch begin.
That was the gossip site TMZ on whose pregnancy that was announced this week.
It would be the Duchess of Cambridge.
Oh, very good. You got her title.
I thought she
Princess
was...
Kate.
Yeah. I didn't know she was a duchess.
Yeah. Didn't you know? She became a duchess when she married the prince.
I thought she was a princess when she married the prince. Have you not seen any Disney movies?
Last year's royal wedding, of course, between Kate and William was a fairy tale, and now we know that living happily ever after includes at least one session of unprotected sex.
But isn't... Now, wait a minute. Didn't she have to go into the hospital for her morning sickness?
She did. Well, it wasn't her morning sickness. She had a condition that sometimes happens in certain pregnancies, but she's fine now. You'll be happy to know that she's quite healthy. She's gotten her latest edition of What to Expect When You're Expecting the Next Ruler of England. The first chapter in its entirety is not much, really. There is some health issues involved because there's a long history of birth by cesarean section in the royal family. Queen Elizabeth herself was born that way. But doctors say that because Kate is herself not of royal blood, thereby ending generations of inbreeding, that her baby will be the first in decades to be smart enough to find its own way out.
Do they videotape, or does the paparazzi videotape for them when the baby's coming out? Do they show up?
I guess that you can have your choice, really.
They're going to have a little red carpet down the canal.
Those are hard to install.
That's true.
They're having professional installers and a deal.
Does she come out with a crown, like a tiara, if it's a crown?
Well, they do call it crowning.
It's amazing how quick we've made everybody uncomfortable.
It really is true.
Do they?
No shame in that.
Okay, your next quote is from Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
Think of the economy as a car, and the rich man is the driver. If you don't give the driver all the money, he'll drive you over a cliff. It's just common sense.
Mr. Burns was explaining what?
The fiscal cliff.
The fiscal cliff, yes, of course. Here we are again talking about the fiscal cliff. Another week, another 7 days rushing over the cliff. Everybody seems to be scared of it, but apparently we're all willing to go over it so each side can prove how confident they are in their positions. It's not a fiscal cliff. It's a fiscal trust fall. But this week, the crisis started to seem different. It seems different from all the other crises we've had for the last few years. It's a brand new Obama. He's actually standing his ground. The Republicans aren't used to it. Every time the GOP makes a demand, Obama says no. And they're like, excuse me, we didn't understand. No? Is that like some sort of Kenyan word? We don't... What does that mean?
Why are we always coming up with stuff to get scared of? Is there, nothing better to do? It was like, you know, Y2K, then why this? As always, I'm always fearing something big is going to happen.
Well, there's a huge industrial media complex that needs something to be upset about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine, say, Chris Matthews going, everything's fine. Everything's terrific.
We're going to talk about how terrific it is right after this.
Yes, exactly. We've got some puppies to look at. And some people who are satisfied with their lives. Stay tuned. I mean, it's not going to work, right?
I would love that because it would take away from my other anxieties that I have. Then I could be like, oh, great. Then the world is okay. Now I can worry about my 22-month-old peeing on the rug. Because that's what she does. And that makes me nervous.
You know, you can diaper them. MSNBC, I think that they have never left that studio. That's what I think.
Yeah, they all live there.
They do, because they, I swear to you, the other day, I saw Andrea Mitchell. Oh, I didn't even know she had a show, but she did. She had the Andrea Mitchell show or something, and she said, it's me, Andrea Mitchell. They keep interviewing each other. She goes, it's me, Andrea Mitchell, at the Andrea Mitchell show, and thank you for joining me, Andrea Mitchell. And then she says, you know, I got, I don't know, Tracy Jackson's going to be here in a minute, and they split screen, there's Tracy Jackson. Well, you know, you're going to enjoy the Tracy Jackson show. Tracy Jackson, I'm going to turn it over to you any second now. I think Tracy Jackson. Tracy Jackson goes, thank you for joining me on the Tracy Jackson show. This is going to be fantastic. My first guest today is Andrea Mitchell.
And you think, I love the idea that they all do their shows and then they go to sleep. They get into their jammies and it's like, good night, Chris. Good night, Rachel. I mean...
Are we going to wake up? We'll find out after this.
All right, Gable, here is your last quote.
Scary rumors are just rumors.
That was the U.S. government that this week officially denied that what will happen on December 21st.
Could it be that the world will end?
Indeed, yes.
One more thing to worry about.
Apparently, enough people are worried about this that the U.S. government had to make an official statement on the USA.gov website, and I quote it, many of these rumors involve the Mayan calendar ending in 2012. It won't. A comet causing catastrophic effects? Definitely not. A hidden planet sneaking up and colliding with us? No and no, unquote.
It says no and no?
No and no.
Weren't we already supposed to end?
Oh, we've been supposed to end a number of times, but as you know, a number of people are worried about 2012, December 21st.
What do you mean, as you know? I didn't know, which is why I was asking. I don't even know what the Mayan calendar is. I use a cat calendar, and right. It goes on forever.
What is amazing is that the government had to make a statement to convince these people the world isn't going to end. This isn't going to work because, you know, the people who most believe that the world is going to end on December 21st are the people least likely to believe the government when they say that it won't.
Right.
But
you know who the world is going to end for, though?
Who?
People who sell Mayan calendars.
Oh, it's going to be
terrible business.
Carl, how did Gable do in our quiz?
Gable, congratulations. You had 3 correct answers. You win our prize.
Well done, Gable. Congratulations. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news, of course. Moz, hold on to your hat. A shocking scientific discovery from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. According to psychology researchers, humans like what?
Humans like what?
Yes. They discovered this scientifically.
Scientifically, humans like food.
Even more than the food.
Air.
Presumably more than air, because this came in first and second list.
Sex.
Yes.
Woo!
Not only sex, but booze and sex. It's been scientifically proven. The psychologist found people like drinking beer and having sex, and also that you can get a research grant for pretty much anything these days. Researchers had subjects make a list of the best things in life, and participants ranked sex number one, drinking number two, and volunteering number three. We assume number four in the list of favorite things to do was lying about what number three is.
There was no study.
There was.
I'll tell you what that was. That was a bunch of scientists trying to answer the question, what the hell are we going to do about these receipts?
What was the sample size on that?
I think it was one guy in a room going, what would I rather be doing right now? One.
Well, you know, they always go to college kids to get them to volunteer to be the...
Yeah, that's true.
What else are they going to like besides sex and... booze. The food should have been up there. I'm older now. Food should make a move. Food.
You are playing Family Feud with yourself right now.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Christy.
Hey, Christy, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
That's terrific to hear. Where are you calling from?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, it's beautiful in Portland. Yay, we have some Portlanders here. Portland is the place where a lot of people in L.A. imagine going as soon as they hit it big, right? Welcome to our show, Christy. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Christy's topic?
World's greatest dad.
If you're a dad, then you are, by default, the most embarrassing person in the world. But this week, our panelists are going to read you three stories of dads going above and beyond in their efforts to become the world's coolest dad. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's fatherly voice on your voicemail. Ready to play?
Sure.
First, let's hear from Maz Jobrani.
Paul Wallach, a dad from Vermont, used to walk his son to the school bus stop every day. But after a while, he got sick of walking his boy. So he came up with a solution, a homemade drone that could do it for him. He fitted a quadcopter with a camera and GPS tracker to follow his son to the bus stop every day. Used to be, parenting meant a parent had to actually be there to parent. But not in this day and age of technology. Why teach your kids the ABCs when you could have Siri do it for you? Wallach's invention might be the first step into this world of step-parenting. Wallach said, I fantasized about sitting at my computer while a camera-equipped drone followed my son overhead. So this year, I set out to build one. Wallach attached a smartphone running a video chat application and a sensor that can track a GPS unit in his son's backpack. It's designed to stay a preset distance away from the tracker to avoid knocking right into his son in the process. At least he's made sure the drone won't actually attack his son. Unlike the local bullies, who will?
A father creates a robotic drone to walk his kid to school. Your next story of a dad pulling out all the stops comes from Adam Felber.
What do you do when your son is running for student council president? How do you pitch in and help? Well, if you're businessman Bill Upton of St. Louis, you buy the election. Yes, classmates of Gareth Upton at the George A. Jackson Middle School found themselves with new computers on their desks, a new athletic center, and just outside the school grounds, a table giving away free Xbox Kinects engraved with Vote for Gareth. Sounds unfair, but according to Principal Caroline Framke, quote, we can't do anything about it. Money is speech. Yes, the effects of the Citizens United decision have been felt all the way down the political food chain, allowing Bill Upton to become the middle school equivalent of Sheldon Adelson and young Gareth his Newt Gingrich, or Mitt Romney, if you will. And just as with Sheldon, Newt, and Mitt before him, Gary lost the election. Yes, at the end of the day, the kids took the treats and voted for the other guy, who in this case was a girl named Lita Lise Fish. Bill isn't talking to the media right now, but young Gareth insists it was all worth it. Hey, he says, at the end of the day, I got an Xbox Kinect.
Which, when I think of it, is more than Newt Gingrich got. A kid's dad becomes a sugar daddy for his kid to win election, and it doesn't work. And your last story of a father going to extremes for his kids comes from Paula Poundstone.
The second graders in teacher Marsha Green's class at McKinley Elementary School in Fort Blaise, Indiana, always look forward to the annual My Favorite Animal Project. This year, student Andrea Brandt made a box turtle out of construction paper and cut up milk jug. Cameron Barrett painstakingly twisted 100 legs onto his balloon centipede. Little Gordy McKee's favorite animal is the elephant. So his father, Thomas, gave a little parental support. Did he drive him to school so his clay elephant wouldn't get broken on the bus? No. Did he give up his newspaper for the papier-mâché elephant? No. He rented an elephant. The play yard is ruined, says Principal Tosha Fundenstein, and the kids will never have to walk single file through the cafeteria door again. At about 11:30 a.m., just after a healthy snack time, I felt my desk shake. My Slurpee nearly fell off. I thought it was an earthquake, so I made the announcement for the students and staff to get under their desks, and I looked up to see an elephant crashing through the main office without a pass. The stupid thing ripped the door off the refrigerator in the teacher's lounge. You'd think the shelves of ancient yogurts would have stopped him cold, but no, says Fundenstein. He smashed through the AV closet as well. Now we have no projector for the words to the non-Christian holiday songs at our holiday sing-along. And who the hell knows the words to any non-Christian holiday songs? Pardon my French, but Thomas McKee is a big doo-doo head.
So, these are your choices. Each a story of a father going that extra mile. From Maz Jobrani, a father who built a robotic drone to follow his own child to the bus stop and back because there's no surveillance like automated surveillance. From Adam Felber, a father, a wealthy one, who tried to buy an election for his child and it didn't work. And from Paula Poundstone, a father who loved his child so very, very much, he rented an elephant, which then wrecked the school. Which is the true story of parental overachievement?
Well, I wanted to go with Paula at first.
We all do.
Yeah.
But I would.
I just can't get over the principal's name. That just doesn't sound right.
What was the principal's name, Paula?
Tosha Fundenstein.
Are you asking us or telling us?
Wait a minute.
I don't see a problem with that.
All right, but go on.
So now I'm stuck between the political scandal in the middle school or the drone.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to go with the drone.
You're going to go with the drone. You're going to go with Maz's story. The audience approves.
It's ridiculous.
Well, we were lucky enough to actually speak to this ambitious father himself. Here he is.
If you're going to be a helicopter parent, you might as well have one.
That was Paul Wallach. He's a writer and tinker and the father who made a drone to walk his son to school. Obviously, Christy, you were correct. Maz had the right answer. You trusted your instincts. You were correct. You've won our game, and Maz has won a point. Congratulations, Christy. You did well.
Thank you very much. This was great.
Thank you, Christy, so much.
Bye, Christy. Hey.
Bye. Bye.
When the helicopters come, they're the power in the blood. When the helicopters come.
And now the game where people do something dumb to take a break from being so smart the rest of the time. America is obsessed with Downton Abbey, the great British series. Yes, we all love it. It's about a family so profoundly stupid they can't feed, clothe, or care for themselves in any way. Oh, I'm sorry, my mistake. They're not stupid, they're rich. Hugh Bonneville plays the patriarch of the family, Lord Grantham, and we are delighted to welcome his lordship to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, I've been watching the show and really loving it, but I'm not quite to the protocol, so how should we address you? My lord, your grace.
Hugh?
Hugh? Nobody in the show calls you that, but all right, we'll go with that. People I know and admire and work with and are friends with loved the show. And I would say, what's it about? And they said, well, you know, it's all about the love affairs and the clothes and the intrigue of who's in love with whom. And I'm like, oh, it's a soap opera, great. I'm uninterested. And then I started watching it. And it is absolutely great. And it has made me into an idiot. I used to care about important things. Now I'm like, oh, dear, will Lady Mary accept Mr. Crowley's proposal? I don't know. I can't stop. Can you explain why this show is so compelling?
I genuinely don't know. I'm delighted, but yeah. I don't know why. I think one of the things is that Julian Fellowes, who writes every episode, is a huge fan of a soap we have in Britain called Coronation Street.
Right, that was a classic soap that's been on for many, many years.
And he's also a great fan of The West Wing. So if you put the soap elements and the pace of The West Wing and a bit of period drama so you think you're watching something intelligent, then then you've got a recipe for something. But I think over and above that, the production aims high. Whether it succeeds every time, I don't know. But it's set in a beautiful castle in the south of England. Yorkshire, sorry, in the north of England, but we film it in the south. And
you must have a really great zoom lens.
But I think, I don't know, I think if you could you could analyze it to death, but please don't, just stay watching it.
I will, we'll be happy to. One of the things about the show is a lot of the appeal, even to me, a schlub like Neil, is the extraordinary grace and the clothing and the design of the home and all their accoutrements. If the show is so much about elegance and a way of living that I can only aspire to or imagine aspiring to, why does every episode begin with the shot of a dog's butt? It's the weirdest thing. It's like we've got a palace, we've got these beautiful actors, we've got motor cars, but let's start with the dog's butt.
And my name next to it.
Exactly.
Someone up there hates me. I don't know. I don't know why. It's an interesting opening choice, but it's become a bit of a thing about the show now.
Oh, yeah.
Hound's bum.
You know. Really?
Yeah.
That's what they call it.
Hashtag hound's bum.
I'm actually very curious. Is it, do you know, historically accurate in the sense that it depicts
yes,
how
yes, dogs have always looked like that from behind. Sorry about that.
In the sense that, is this how people of that station lived at that time?
Oh, I think it, as I said earlier, I think it aspires to some degree of authenticity, but and if it makes someone reach for the history books and learn a bit more about that era, terrific. But no, ultimately, it's a fiction. But we do have a wonderful historical advisor on set. A guy.
Does he drink? Hugh, do you know whether it's accurate or not?
No.
Really?
No. He's
so if it makes someone else reach for a history book.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not me. I'm too busy.
he's busy learning lines.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. My mistake.
And doing the fake British accent.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's excellent.
The thing doesn't maintain itself.
Do you ever, wonder? I mean, do you ever go to Julian Fellowes, the writer, and go, look, so you're telling me these incredibly wealthy, powerful people sit around the house all day, amusing themselves with walks and perhaps a horse ride if they're feeling really active, and then they just wait for someone to ring a gong where they put on formal clothes and are fed dinner, and then they all go to bed and don't have sex. Are you telling me that's how these people live?
Peter, you're making it sound very shallow and silly.
No.
isn't there one guy who works? Someone's got to bring home the money. No,
No, nobody works. There's a thing where somebody says, I have a job, and people say, you have a job? A job? In fact, I don't know what Lord Grantham does. You always seem to be sitting there writing at your desk.
Mm.
And I don't know what you're writing, because you have no job. Are you writing, all play and no work is pretty much my whole day. All play and no work is pretty much my... I mean, what?
He's been filling out an application during several episodes.
Slightly more seriously, I am very impressed by, frankly, your performance. The fact that your role is to play this person who embodies this aristocracy and this position and this authority, and you do it fantastically well. You act like a lord. Did you have to... He does he not?
No, he does.
He seems like a kind of a regular guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's my question. I mean, what did you have to do?
That tank top is a bit much.
What did you have to do? It's like, to be the Lord, what do you have to put yourself into to be the Lord Grantham?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you just put on the suit and follow Julian Fellowes around a bit. I mean, he's a Lord. it's just a fun... It's just dressing up in frocks and prancing around. I love it.
I do that at home, but I try to keep it a secret, actually. There's broadly speaking, one group of actors that play Lord Grantham and his family, another group of actors who play the downstairs servants, and obviously on screen there's a very hierarchical relationship. Does that ever
Does that ever, like, seep into the offstage? I mean, do you find yourself asking, like, the actor who plays the butler to fetch you something from the craft table?
Funnily enough, it's sort of the opposite. I mean, Sophie McShearer, who plays Daisy the kitchen maid, is a monster. Absolute monster.
Really? Bonneville, really? Get me some tea, Bonneville.
She's always doing
really?
That. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Well, Hugh Bonneville, we are delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Welcome to America, Lord Grantham.
So, we were thinking, your show, Downton Abbey, shows us British culture at its height. What would be the American equivalent, the TV show, that not only shows America as it is, but as we most wish it to be? So we're going to ask you three questions about the show Here Comes Honey Boo Boo on TLC. It's the American... Do you know the show? It's the American Downton Abbey.
Right.
Much like... No, it is. Yes. Much like Downton Abbey shows a British family dealing with the misfortunes and slings and arrows of time, so does Honey Boo Boo. Yeah. In a... Different problems. Same dignity. Carl, okay. Hugh is Hugh Bonneville playing for?
Hugh is playing for Louise Garland of Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
Louise, I'll do my best.
Here Comes Honey Boo Boo is, as I'm sure you know, I'm sure everybody here knows, a reality show that follows the adventures of a six-year-old girl named Alana, nicknamed Honey Boo Boo, who enters beauty pageants. Her nickname is obviously Honey Boo Boo. What are the nicknames of the rest of her family? Is it A, Mama June, Sugar Bear, Pumpkin, Chubbs, and Chickadee? B, Haley Joe, Joseph Joe, Mary Joe, Girly Joe, and Gwyneth? Or C, Angel Hair, Linguini, Ravioli, Mostaccioli, and Cavatappi?
Can you give me the first one again?
First one was Mama June, Sugar Bear, Pumpkin, Chubbs, and Chickadee. Second
it's gonna
was...
It's going to be that. It's going to be A.
You're going to go for that? You're going to go, I'm just asking you.
I'm going to go for A.
You're right. It is Mama June is the mother, Sugar Bear the father. Pumpkin, Chubbs, and Chickadee are Honey Boo Boo's sisters. That's good, Hugh. That was done in an aristocratic way. Here is your next question. Which of these is the real title of an episode in the first season of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo? A spoon, a jar of glue, and trouble. B, she oohed herself. Ood spelled O-O-O-O-O-O-H-E-D. Or C, the end of Western civilization.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, she oohed herself?
Yeah.
You're right, she oohed herself. Here's the synopsis of She Oohed Herself. Alana meets with a new pageant coach and learns her hardest routine yet. Then the whole family throws Chickadee a baby shower. It was moving. Here's your last question. The producers knew Honey Boo Boo's show would be a success when it did very well against another popular program being broadcast at the same time. What was it? Was it A, The Walking Dead, B, The Late Show with David Letterman, or C, the third and final night of the Republican National Convention this year?
The convention?
Yes.
See.
It was the convention.
Nice. Wow.
The fourth episode of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo was counter-programmed against Mitt Romney's Big Night in Tampa, and it did really well. It beat all the cable networks, the news networks, in the 18 to 14 demographic, which is why we still have Honey Boo Boo. Carl, how did Hugh Bonneville do in our quiz?
He had three correct answers, Peter, so Hugh, you win for Louise Garland.
Well done. Hugh Bonneville stars as Lord Grantham in Masterpiece Classics, Downton Abbey. Third season begins in January. Hugh Bonneville, what a pleasure to meet you in person.
Thank you.
And to have
Thank
you with
you.
Us. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl settles the debate and says the best baseball team in Southern California is the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, there's a new dating site available for people who are tired of Match.com. This dating site is run
and
by whom?
I am.
I bet. This dating site is run by whom?
Well, there's ChristianSingles.com.
No, not Christian Singles. This is an organization that's been around for a while, but they're not just now getting into the internet dating business.
It's an organization that's been around for a while. CIA?
I like it.
You will never know we dated.
This group may be tired of Match.com, but they're also tired in general.
There is a tired group?
Well, they nap.
Toddlers?
No. That would be strange. Other end of the age spectrum.
Wait, old people?
Yeah, which are the
But they're the organizers?
No, the organizers of the Waiting Depth Side are...
AARP?
Yes, the AARP has a rating website. It's a new service.
They keep sending me cards.
Yeah.
I've about had it with them, because I feel that when I want their cards, I will let them know.
I understand.
So you know what I do?
What do you do, Paula?
I cut them up. That's what I do. I get their cards, I cut them up. And you know what I figure? Eventually I'm going to get to an age where I can't cut them up anymore, and I'm in.
What of the hand strength to make the scissors work?
I don't want to be a part of AARP. But so wait, so now they're doing dating
service?
Yes,
there are. You see, the idea is like, you know, a lot of demographic groups have their own dating service. J-Date is for Jews. OkCupid is for cherubs. The AARP announced this week it's partnering with a site called howaboutwe.com. Howaboutwe.com. And this will be a dating site for people who finish that sentence with watch 60 minutes and call it a night. Paula, famously rude Vogue editor Anna Wintour may have the perfect job lined up for her next. What is it?
She might be the ambassador to London.
Exactly right. Yes, the U.S. ambassador. Bloomberg News reported that the editor of Vogue, who's also a big fundraiser for President Obama, is being considered for one of the two plum postings in the diplomatic corps, Britain, because she's British by birth, or France, because she speaks fluent rude.
Ha! Ooh la la.
It's not unusual for wealthy donors to be appointed as ambassadors to those two countries, but usually, as one White House reporter put it, diplomats have to be diplomatic. The concern is that, like, 6 months after she goes to Britain, say, we'll be at war because our ambassador said Buckingham Palace makes the Queen look fat.
You know, Anna Wintour could help the Queen. The Queen is always dressed in like bright, like, remember at the wedding, she had a bright yellow, she looked like a pimp. She looks like a pimp, Queen.
Yeah, she does.
Seriously, the only people that get away with bright yellow outfits are pimps and the Queen. I think Anna Wintour should get there and be like, less pimp, Queen.
Yeah.
Why are pimps choosing to dress like the Queen of England is my question.
Maz, a new study shows 1/3 of young adults use social media while doing what?
1/3 of young people use social media while watching television.
No.
While using other social media. I've seen that before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've seen it. You got the iPad and the phone and the computer, and you're just like, ugh.
No.
No?
None of those things would be shocking or slightly disgusting.
Oh, it's a shocking, slightly disgusting thing.
Yes.
Going to the bathroom.
Of course.
Oh, that's not just young people.
Yeah, well. Yeah. This is, you don't need to take a survey. It's obvious with some status updates, like, look what I had for dinner yesterday.
No, well, you know why. You know why they take it to the bathroom? Because they make it so small and easy. If it were the big computer of the old days, you couldn't be like, oh, let me just take this and plug it in while I do my business. You can't do that. But now,
It is a little disgusting, but it is better than the old days when you'd be sitting there in a stall and hear a typewriter from the next one. That was awful. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium back home in Chicago, and check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to find a charger for your phone when you forgot yours at home. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Nikki.
Hey, Nikki, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm as excited to hear from you as you apparently are to
I don't
hear from
think
us.
You are. I don't think that's possible.
Where are you calling from, Nikki?
I'm calling from Aurora, Colorado.
Oh, that's
wow.
That's not far from Denver, right?
No, right outside, suburb.
Well, yeah, it's a suburb. What do you do there?
I'm a high school English teacher.
That is a tough job. And I appreciate you doing it.
That's what everyone says when I say that.
And is it a tough job, or are we all correct in our assumption?
No, it's like rainbows and puppies and sunshine every day.
That was almost convincing.
I would say then you're not doing it right. Nikki, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks. Of course, you being an English teacher are familiar with the classic poetic form of the limerick.
Highest form of poetry.
It really is. Carl studied at the International Institute of Limericks, which is based, of course, in Nantucket.
Yes.
I was there during the summer.
I know. So your job, of course, finish it, do it 2 times out of 3, you'll win our prize. Carl's Weiss in your home answering machine. Are you ready to do this, Nikki?
Yes, absolutely.
Let us hear the first one.
Now we'll find out what Benedict's eating, or things cardinals think worth repeating. Father, Son, Holy Ghost will inform all his posts, as at Pontifex he will start.
Oh, man. Eating?
No, I think he's been eating for a while now. It's tweeting.
Oh, tweet. Oh, geez. Okay.
Pope Benedict has joined Twitter from the account at Pontifex. He'll be sending 140-character tweets in 8 languages, including Latin, and answering questions from followers like, it's not a funny hat, it's called a miter, and you're called blocked. If this goes well, the church will announce future popes via Twitter. Just look for hashtag puff of smoke.
You should be Pope Daddy on Twitter. I think that's a good name.
Yeah.
P and P Diddy. P. Diddy and Pope Daddy just hanging out. If I ever get that tweet, I will be so excited. If
really?
I get from the Pope, Pope Daddy and P. Diddy at the club.
There you are.
Yo.
Just hanging. All right, Nikki, here is your next limerick.
My fears about death start to soften as I lay in my pine box more often. Embalmers know best how to face final rest. They suggest to take naps in a...
coffin?
Coffin, yes. Have you ever been to an open casket funeral and said to yourself, God, that looks comfortable? Well, thanks to a Polish casket maker, you no longer have to die first to try one out. For $25 a session, this guy is offering the living the chance to come to terms with their mortality by lying in a coffin for 15 minutes. He's calling it coffin therapy. Others are calling it the time I paid $25 for a panic attack.
Yeah, it's a horrible idea. Who on earth would do that? I mean, at what point in your life would you do that?
Oh, the end of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, they do cost a lot. So if you know you're about to die, for $25, you could get into one and just be like, hey, I died. I'm out.
Get me out of here.
What are you going to take me out of this coffin and put me in another? Yeah, that's a good point
yeah.
Right there. I don't want to, you know what, that's a terrible idea, you know, although, you know, the holidays are coming up.
Yeah. Bad news is, didn't get you the Xbox. Good news,
That's a way to send a hint to a relative.
Yeah, it really is. Nikki, here is your last limerick.
If it's pizza you love to consume, don't smell flowers, but yeast in full bloom. Though the pun might cause groans, it's a dough de cologne. It is Pizza Hut's brand of...
perfume!
Yes, perfume!
Oh, my heavens!
This week, Pizza Hut announced that it is releasing its own line of perfumes, which they claim smell of, quote, freshly baked pizza dough.
Oh, wow.
Obviously inspired by a better pizza restaurant then. Now, guys... Before you go buying this for your girlfriend, ask yourself this. Do I really want my girlfriend to smell the way I do when she is out of town? Carl, how did Nikki do in our quiz?
Nikki had 2 correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win our prize.
Well
done. Congratulations.
Yay!
Thank you, Nikki.
Great to talk to you.
It is time to go on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Maz Jobrani has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Paula Poundstone and Adam Felber are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right. We have flipped a coin. Adam is elected to go first. Clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, President Obama and other NATO leaders warned blank not to use chemical weapons.
Syria.
Right. Saying he's going to become the president of the Heritage Foundation. On Thursday, South Carolina Senator blank announced his resignation.
Jim the Mint.
Right. Hours after Guatemalan officials rejected his request for asylum, virus protection software pioneer blank was hospitalized.
McAfee.
Right. Legendary jazz performer and composer blank died Wednesday at age 91.
Dave Brubeck.
Right. A California couple who needed home repairs is in trouble for allegedly blanking.
Repairing it themselves.
No, kidnapping a handyman and making him fix their dishwasher.
Good strategy.
In the first 6 hours after same-sex marriage became legal, 279 couples received marriage licenses this week in blank.
Washington.
Yes, Led Zeppelin, Dustin Hoffman, and David Letterman were among the recipients of the blanks this year in Washington.
Carl Castle's Kennedy Center honors.
Indeed, Carl was the MC. A team of workmen in France hired to renovate a historic 18th-century chateau accidentally blanked.
Knocked the whole thing down.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
The team of Polish workers was hired to renovate the chateau and demolish a few small outhouses. Instead, they demolished the chateau and kept the outhouses. Finally, answering the question, how many Polish workers does it take to destroy a historic chateau?
You know, every time anybody of Polish origin makes a mistake, they must be like, I know where this is going.
Oh, yeah. Carl, how did Adam do on the quiz? I think he did quite well.
He did, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14
wow.
more points. He now has 16 points, and Adam has the lead.
Oh, my.
Paula.
It's a situation. That's what it is.
I'm no math genius, but I think in order to tie him, you're going to have to get 7 right as well.
Oh, my heavens. Do you mind if I just take a minute to stretch, Peter? All right, I won't. Okay.
Fill in the blank, Paula. Here we go. After it was stormed by thousands of protesters on Thursday, the army sealed off the presidential palace in blank.
Egypt?
Yes. In a ceremony at the Ellipse on Thursday, President Obama and his family lit the national blank.
Christmas tree?
Right. Mitt sure. Romney announced this week that he would be rejoining the board of directors of the blank hotel chain.
I didn't even know he was on the board of the directors of the blank hotel chain. La Quinta. It's not La Quinta.
No, it's Marriott. Marriott. Sportscaster Bob Costas drew criticism for seeming to advocate blank during his halftime commentary on Sunday Night Football.
Gun control.
Right. Singer Frank Ocean and the Papa Band Fun were among the nominees named for this year's blank awards.
Ocean and the Papa Band Fun?
Papa Band Fun.
Papa Band Fun.
Papa Band. Blank awards, Paula. Blank awards.
Honey Boo Boo.
The Grammy Awards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that
a
was
German
the
German man who was pulled over for drunk driving was arrested when he blanked.
Oh, I know. When he tried to use the breathalyzer to call his lawyer.
That's exactly what he did. Well
wow.
done.
Oh.
Police handed the breathalyzer to Bernhard Becker so he could blow into it for a breath test, but instead he thought it was an iPhone and started trying to make a call on it.
Hilarious.
Said police, you know, we didn't really need the reading. Carl, how did Paula do?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points, but Adam still has the lead with 16.
All right. So then, how many does Maz need to win?
I'd say 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Here we go, Maz. This is for the game. This week, the CDC warned that this year's blank season may be particularly bad.
Flu.
Right. Because of their concerns over expanded settlement building, the UK announced it was considering recalling its ambassador to blank.
Israel?
Yes.
Yeah.
A robbery in a Las Vegas restaurant took a bizarre turn when the robber accidentally blanked.
When the robber accidentally shot somebody.
No, what he did was he deep-fried his gun. Apple CEO Tim Cook announced Thursday that starting next year, Apple will begin building some computers in blank.
U.S.
Yes, indeed. Playboy mogul Hugh Hefner announced this week that he is once again blanking playmate Crystal Harris.
Oh, yes, he is. marrying.
Yes, marrying.
Proving that voters love a businessman, the new county commissioner in Nevada won his race by touting his experience managing blank.
The county commissioner in Nevada managing, county commissioner in Nevada managing a casino.
No, managing a brothel.
Oh, I was about to say that.
Yet you didn't. Oh. Lance Gilman is the owner and operator of the Mustang Ranch Brothel in Story County, Nevada, and now he's one of the county commissioners in Story County. The first pimp to be elected to office in our country, but only if you mean the term literally. It's going to be awkward when he shows up at the city hall and all the politicians are like, don't I know you from somewhere? Carl, did Maz do well enough to win?
Maz had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 12. But with 16 points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Maz. Hey. Well done, Adam, in front of a hometown crowd.
Yeah.
Great to see you. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict, since the world probably won't end, what will really happen on December 21st, as the Mayans predicted. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur language programs, offering tools to say happy holidays in more than 50 languages with 30-minute daily lessons at Pimsleur.com. The SCAN Foundation, committed to aging with dignity and independence at thescanfoundation.org, and the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to support America's national security and competitiveness in a clean energy economy at pewtrusts.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our intern is Leah, a few good Menzer. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to Susan Rosenbluth and everyone at the Nokia Theater in downtown Los Angeles, California. DJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical directors from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Rumpelnibbles Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will happen on December 21st? Paula Poundstone.
Well, according to the Mayan calendar, Santa and his elves will begin to load the sleigh.
Maz Kobrani.
The Republicans are going to blame the Mayans for lying and leading us over the fiscal cliff.
And Adam Felber.
I don't know what's going to happen on the 21st, but I know that December 22nd is going to feature a lot of Mayans frantically doing their Christmas shopping.
Well, if any of these things happen, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Gil Gossel. Thank you, Paula Poundstone, Michael Bunny, Adam Felber. Thanks to everyone at Southern California Public Radio and our fabulous and enormous audience at the beautiful, brand-new Nokia Theater in downtown Los Angeles, California. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you back home in Chicago next week. This is NPR.